Saturdays ago, I went with a battered woman to get her belongings from the home. We couldn't get police protection. 7 years of marriage ended literally in 7 garbage bags of her belongings. And we were glad to get out of there unharmed.
Physical violence against women is wife beating, and it is increasing. It is a fact of life for women throughout the world and for thousands of women in the U.S. alone. According to a conservative estimate by the FBI, every 18 seconds a woman is beaten by her husband or boyfriend. Until recently, wife beating was considered a thing of the past, like arranged marriages, or else people believed that it only happened in the working class. Most grimly, it was one of our favorite jokes. Comic strips, songs, TV, and movies often portrayed a nagging, shrewish wife getting her justly deserved lesson. Today, thanks to the efforts of women working across the country, we are finally beginning to confront this deadly, serious problem. And thousands of women who have suffered in isolation within the walls of their own homes are learning that they are not alone. During the next half hour, we will be examining some of the common myths concerning wife abuse, as well as its social and political roots. We will also be discussing some of the solutions. About woman abuse in our culture. We know that it crosses all class, race, and generation lines. Corporation executives, unemployed men, young and old may beat their wives with the same violence and frequency. The question is why? Are the beatings caused by alcohol, pressures outside the home, or are they caused by the woman herself? We talked about this to Val Jones of the Women's Legal Defense Fund Task Force on Abused Women.
I think a lot of the reason that wife abuse exists is because men feel that they have a right to possess women, especially their girlfriends or their wives, that women are property. And as long as that attitude about women as not being equal, as not deserving respect of being property, as long as all of those attitudes exist, wife abuse and rape and violence against women is going to exist.
Lisa Leghorn is a longtime activist against wife abuse, co-author of the Houseworker's Handbook, and a worker at Transition House in Boston, one of the first shelters for abused women in the United States. At a conference on wife abuse, Lisa had this to say about why men beat women.
The present organization of the home and family, whereby the husband wears the proverbial pants and the wife and children are commonly viewed as his dependents and his property, is a primary cause of the high incidence of wife abuse. More basically, I feel that the problem stems from our entire social, economic, political, and cultural organization of society, whereby women as a group are viewed as dependent, childlike, and capable of less, though castrating Amazons if we strive for more. In my experience, it seems undeniably true that the battering is an attempt to put and keep women in their place. It happens whenever a man perceives that a woman is either stepping out of her role, that she might be contemplating stepping out of her role, or even simply to ensure that she would never dare so much as reflect on the possibility of contemplating stepping out of her role. The various interpretations of what it means for a woman to step out of her role are so arbitrary and irrational as to boggle the mind. Story after story is told of a woman beaten or killed when she overcooked a roast, undercooked an egg, wore her hair in a ponytail, or didn't wear her hair in a ponytail. The only common denominator in all the stories is the fact that in any given instance, a woman did not conform totally to a man's expectations, not only in terms of her behavior, but also in terms of her thinking, that she didn't second guess what his will might be in any given situation.
At the same conference, Etta Horn, one of the founders of the National Welfare Rights Organization, spoke about the horrors of women trapped in violent homes.
Women's lives are going into the graveyard. Men are beating them up. Just to give you one example, a friend of mine, I wish she'd have been attending to me because I'd have been in jail for her case. She's dead now. She was pregnant. She had no mother. And when the night of her baby to be born, he had beat her, and she died and did not regain conscience. That's just one of them. That's just one of them. And you think that when you don't have no friends, no relatives, nobody who wants to really give you support, you have yourself at the mercy of a demon.
Outside her home, she encounters a bewildering array of official indifference, legal catch-22s, misunderstanding, and often outright hostility from the social service agencies, police, and court system. The first of these encounters a woman may have is with the police when she calls for emergency help for protection from her husband. Lois Yankowski is a Washington lawyer concerned with battered women.
The biggest problem with the police up to now has been that they refuse to arrest or to interfere with a situation when a woman's getting beaten. They justify this by saying, well, they don't have authority to arrest unless the actual assault occurs in their presence. Now, of course, the police are not likely to be in a person's house and actually witness a beating. So they oftentimes will not, almost all times, they will not arrest the man involved. And they leave the woman, they'll take the man outside, walk him around the block, tell him to cool off, and tell the woman next day if she really wants to pursue this, that she can obtain an arrest warrant from the prosecutor. The main problem is that a woman is not given any protection in this time period. On almost any other case, the police main job would be to assure that the victim would not be subject to further abuse. And wife abuse, they don't care about this. In fact, in the District of Columbia, a number of policemen are wife abusers themselves. A woman we work with in the task force on abused women has had several clients whose husbands were policemen who were abusers. So it's easy to see why they would take this approach. The police will come, the husband will be angered that she dared to ask someone else to interfere in the situation, and they'll leave her in the same position that she was before, vulnerable to further abuse by her husband.
And you got police who will say, well, I don't want to be bothered, because he might go home and beat his wife. And he don't want nobody to tell him nothing. So he is the officer of the law, and they're to uphold it, but he's still got a little trick thought back in his mind that he doesn't want to really, you know, bother the brother. And that brother face can be any race, black, white, Mexican-American, Indian, American, anybody.
If a woman decides to go the route of legal prosecution, she may very well find that being assaulted on the street by a stranger would guarantee her more sympathy from the law than an assault in her home from the man she lives with.
In order for criminal proceedings to begin, the prosecutor has to file a complaint against the husband, and they have a lot of discretion about whether or not to pursue a criminal case against a husband. And they'll put the woman through a series of questions. Well, do you understand that if you prosecute your husband, he may lose his job? Do you understand that he'll probably get out on bail? Any number of questions to discourage the woman from pursuing. They also put a lot of pressure on her in terms of if she brings a suit, later changes her mind and decides not to pursue it, they'll tell her that she can never file another criminal complaint against him.
What about divorce laws? How easy is it for a woman to obtain a divorce on grounds of wife abuse?
It's very difficult. In most places, a woman up to now has had to prove that she'd been beaten several times. She's had to be able to corroborate that through witnesses or with medical reports. And judges wouldn't grant divorces unless a woman could prove that she'd suffered a series of abuse. And then the other twist is if she'd suffered it too long, they'd say, well, why are you bothering to come in now about it? Why are you complaining after having lived with it for 15 years? So either way, she was unlikely to be successful.
He's a hard-hearted papa, beating me all the time.
When confronted with the problem of wife abuse, many people ask why the women simply don't leave, assuming that it's their fault for staying and taking it. We asked Val and Lois about some of the things that prevent women from walking out on violent relationships.
I think that battered women don't leave their husbands or their boyfriends for two major reasons. The first reason is economic, and economically, battered women are forced to stay with their husbands because they can't survive financially without him, because even if they have a job that where they could support their children, they don't have the cash saved up to get out of the house to pay for a motel room for a couple of weeks while they look for another apartment, while they make permanent daycare arrangements for their children. And a lot of women, even middle-class women whose husbands seem financially well off, do not have access to their husband's money themselves. And so even though when they live with their husbands, they seem to be living very comfortably, in fact, they are very economically dependent on him and don't have the resources to leave. The other reason that battered women often stay is psychological. And I think that's a reason that's very important to understand, because there are battered women who could leave financially and don't. One reason is fear. A lot of women are afraid of their husbands and are afraid of retaliation if they leave and he follows them or follows the children home from school to see where she lives. Those men are so violent when they get angry anyway, and what they get angry over is often something as petty as dinner not being ready on time, that women feel that if they really gave him a reason to be angry, like leaving him, that he would become murderous. So they're afraid of retaliation. The other reason is very often what happens when wife abuse has continued for several times or over a period of years, what's happening is that the next morning, when everything is calmed down, the man comes back and he says, oh, honey, I'm really sorry. I don't know what happened. It wasn't me. It was the liquor, or it was the drugs, or it was that I got laid off from work, or it was a million other excuses. It won't happen again. I wasn't myself. I swear it won't happen again. And women really want to believe that. This is a man that they have spent a long time, maybe many years with. It may be the father of their children. They have a lot invested in that relationship. they want, this is someone that they love, basically, and they want to believe that this is the last time, or that it was the alcohol, and that it isn't going to happen again. And a lot of battered women say that they forgive him and they believe him because they really want it to be so. And finally, something happens and they decide that that was the last time.
And what about the social pressures against a woman? A woman failing in her marriage.
Right. There's a lot of social stigma. A lot of women are embarrassed to admit, first of all, that they're beaten at all. And secondly, they feel that if the marriage dissolves, it's going to be on their shoulders, that it shows that they are a failure.
Another major reason why women stay, I think, that really hasn't been dealt with, is that there aren't a lot of other avenues for emotional support for people in this society except for traditional heterosexual marriage. And women don't see options. They see that if they fail in the marriage, they're going to be alone with their children for the rest of their lives. They don't see a warm community of women as being an alternative.
The other dynamic that goes into leaving or not leaving is children. A lot of women stay because they perceive that it would be best for the children if they stayed and made the marriage work or made the relationship work. They think that the children need the financial security and or they need the male role model. They need a father. And so the women stay for their children. But what often happens is that it's for the children a lot of times that women finally leave.
Here is one woman's story about her decision to leave.
Originally, they started during the time that I realized I was pregnant. I stayed then because I felt that my child, the child that I was carrying, deserved a home and a family. After that, the abuses continued. I stayed because of my child. Finally, when my son was about 2 years of age, I had been threatened. I was fearful of my life. I reached the point where I knew I either had to leave or I might be dead. On the evening that I left my husband, he had threatened me and had held a gun at me and told me that he would shoot me. I was afraid. I thought he would. And for months after that, I was afraid to drive my car. I was afraid to go anywhere in any vicinity that I thought he might be in, because I thought he would actually kill me. I had called the police on that occasion and various others. They came, they made attempts to talk to him. I always left. And I would say that I was rather stupid because I always came back. He was always able to convince me that it wouldn't happen again, that he was very angry and very upset about things that had nothing to do with our marriage. But as a result, he took all these things out on me. Finally, after being threatened, like I said, with this gun, I realized that my child was more important to me than a marriage. It just wasn't worth it. I had left with just my child and a few belongings. I went back to get my things, which he had cut up, anything just to get to me. And I made a decision then that it just wasn't worth it. You know, I could definitely live without him. That was 5 years ago. And I feel that I could live the rest of my life without ever having to be abused physically or mentally again.
In many communities, shelters for battered women are being set up. These are safe havens where women can bring their children as they flee from violent husbands. They often arrive with just the clothes on their backs, needing rest, support, legal and housing information, and the space to begin picking up the pieces of their lives. These shelters, if community controlled and run by the women themselves, not by large charity or criminal justice organizations, are an important grassroots step in giving women control over their lives.
When a woman is being abused by her husband or a man who she's living with, her primary need is for a safe place to escape. She needs immediately to get out of that house or apartment, to get away from the violence. And that means that she needs a place to go for maybe one night, and maybe 2 months, and she needs a place where she can take her children. And that is her basic need. And if that need can't be satisfied, then she can't get beyond it to start dealing with her other needs. shelters have sprung up in different cities in a lot of different ways, and I think it's really interesting that some shelters have grown out of ongoing feminist groups that either saw the need for a shelter for bad women and went about getting the funding and set it up, or that established some sort of a women's center to deal with women's problems in general and found that the overwhelming problem they were called to deal with was battered women. And so out of that, they developed from a women's center into a battered women's shelter. The other way that it's happened has been, for instance, in Boston, Transition House started not by a group of politically active feminists. It was started by a couple of welfare mothers who had left their boyfriends or husbands because they were being beaten, and who took their apartment and it opened it up to other welfare mothers who and other women with children who needed to get out of the house in an emergency. And what it was not a shelter with grant money that was funded, but it was one woman opening up her house to 15 or 20 other women so that people were sleeping on the floor. But out of that, a political group started to grow, and other feminists became interested in it, and it became a base.
There are a variety of creative ways that women all over the world have responded to the problem of wife abuse that have greatly helped the women in their communities, although they did not have enough funds for shelters. Some women have joined efforts with local agencies with hotlines to provide counseling services and legal, medical, and housing referrals for battered women. Others have formed underground railway networks of women able and willing to take other women and children into their own homes during crisis situations. Others have arranged with nearby convents or churches for women and children in crisis to stay there. Flo Kennedy has proposed that all battered women go to their nearest church and squat to demand refuge from the institution which, through its vows of holy matrimony and its support of the family till death has parted it, has contributed in a major way to the problem. This last August 26th, 5,000 women marched and rallied in Boston to protest violence against women. More than half the speakers were battered women who'd stayed at Transition House. The effect of this first United States mass speak out about the problem of battered women was to make a strong public statement to women and men both that battered women aren't taking it anymore, but are creating alternatives.
The fight against wife abuse requires that we work on many fronts. We asked Val and Lois what they thought of the effectiveness of pushing through reforms in the criminal justice system.
I think that there are changes that need to be made within the criminal justice system that would give women more options. I think if a woman who has been severely beaten wants to prosecute her husband for her own protection, that ought to be available to her as an option. But at the same time, given the inherent racism and sexism of the criminal justice system, I don't see it as a strategy. The cases that would be prosecuted or more likely to be prosecuted are cases against poor men, third world men, where the state would have an interest anyway in prosecuting those men. Where it's a middle class white man, the state would be a lot less likely.
The other thing that's important to remember is that criminal justice system has a long way to go before it's controlled by women in any sense. The laws in this country were established by white men to protect their property interests, and although there have been some modifications of those laws, they essentially remain the same. And the purpose of the criminal justice system, despite what it would like to have you believe, is certainly not to protect women and third world and poor. The purpose of those laws is to protect white men and their property.
One major area of reform, though, I think that's important for feminists to recognize is the right of a woman to self-defense in situations of wife abuse. About half of the murders between spouses are women who are killing their husbands. And this is very often the result of years and years of wife abuse. And a woman who's endured 20 years of wife abuse and killed her husband is very likely to be charged with first-degree murder.
There are a lot of women doing time right now in federal and local prisons because they killed their husbands who were beating them for years.
Well, I poisoned my man.
me and black mice. I done it in a passion. I thought it was a fashion. I know I've done wrong, but he kicked me and black mice. But if the bloodhounds ever catch me in the lurvy trail, I'll die.
From all of our discussions with abused women and feminists working on the issue, it became clear that the problem of woman abuse is a complicated one, having deep roots in the sexist organization of our society.
It's composed of violence and sexism, and you put them together and you get rape and wife abuse. You have to eliminate the sexism by giving women power and control over their own lives in a real way. And at the same time, you have to eliminate the acceptance, the cultural acceptance of violence, not only violence against women, but violence against children, violence against all oppressed people, third world, poor, both have to be eliminated.
This is a new day, and you want to know why it's a new day? And I don't think too many of us have really thought back to it. We refuse to take what our mothers took. I tell you, when I look at what my mama took, no, 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 I'm not gonna take it.
Anyone interested in more information on the movement to end woman abuse can write for a directory containing listings of activities throughout the country. Write to Betsy Warrior, 46 Pleasant Street, Cambridge, Massachusetts, 02139. This program, or portions thereof, may not be reproduced without the written permission of the Feminist Radio Network. To contact the network, write to Post Office Box 5537, Washington, D.C., 20016.